Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very, very excited for this week's show because I get to talk to somebody who I am a big fan of. She is a filmmaker, an author. She's a contributor at birthmoviesdeath.com and the founder, CEO of Nihil Noctem Films. Please welcome Izzy Lee.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Patrick.
Thank you for coming on the show. You are having a very exciting week, the week that this podcast comes out, because you have two shorts debuting at the Boston Underground Film Festival, correct?
It's true. Yeah, I'm very excited. This is the world premiere for each of them.
That is outstanding. Do you want to give those a quick plug and then we can talk about them?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. The first one that's playing is called For a Good Time Call. And that'll be playing in the trigger warnings block, which is very appropriate. And that's Friday, March 24th at 11:59 p.m. So for all you midnight movie fans, that's prime viewing time. The second one is called Rites of Vengeance, and that's going to play High Holy Noon on Sunday, March 26th with Trinity.
That is very, very cool. I think I first encountered your work. You screened Innsmouth at the Bruce Campbell Fest in Chicago last summer.
Yeah, sure did.
And I was immediately grabbed by it for a number of reasons. the first being just because it was a cool short block, but didn't see a ton of female filmmakers represented in that block. And so it was great to have your film show and then to have you there on the panel. That's a wild movie. I don't want to give away.
It sure is.
It's playing now on Shudder. So everybody should check it out. But can you talk for just a minute, maybe about kind of the genesis of that short?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I met Tristan Risk a couple of years ago at Fantastic Fest, and she was cool as hell. And the short, just to backtrack for a second, the short that is playing next week for Good Time Call was actually the first time we worked together. I brought her in for that. And then when I was applying a prosthetic to her on set, she's like, oh, I'm so glad you're doing this. And, oh, by the way, did I tell you that I do this special human trick? And I'm like, well, what is it? And then she told me and tell the listeners, I don't want to give it away because it would ruin the ending of Innsmouth. My jaw dropped and I said, I would put that on film. And so a couple months later, I was approached by a couple of European producers who were putting together an anthology. And that anthology never happened. And I believe I'm the only filmmaker that ever shot their segment. So par for the course for anthologies, you know, what are you going to do? Their requirements were they wanted something very shocking in terms of death, and they wanted nudity. And if you wanted to have like some sort of literary influence in there, like Poe or Lovecraft, awesome. So I checked off all the boxes.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, for huge Lovecraft fans, I mean, my short is very loosely based on the world of Shadow over Innsmouth. I've updated it. I've, you know, made it in modern times. And I've flipped the gender roles. So, you know, Diana Porter plays Diana Olmsted, who is a detective. So it's no longer Robert Olmsted, Alice Marsh is the one taking center role as well as the daughter of Captain Obed Marsh, and she's the bad lady there. Right. She's got a whole matriarchy full of, you know, converted girl gang members. It's pretty different.
It's really cool, and again, I remember, I think my jaw dropped as well, because it's one thing to see that shot, it's another to see it projected theatrically, and be, holy shit, God bless her for going there, you know?
Yeah, well, the thing was like, all right, who, in terms of like, you know, crazy nudity and shock, I thought like, who is the most fearless person that I know? And then I open my eyes. I'm like, Tristan Risk. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That thing she said to me. And then so I talk to her the next day and she's like, oh, my God, let's do it. I can't wait. I'm excited. And like, yeah, she doesn't give a fuck.
No, she's so awesome. And I get so excited when she pops up and stuff. But like, she also kind of scares me.
And she would like that very much if she heard you say that.
Like, she's awesome, but she's so intimidating, you know.
I get that a lot. You're so scary. I'm like, yeah, it's fun. It's all good. We get it out on screen and in writing. It keeps us out of jail.
And now the two, without, you know, spoiling really what the two new shorts are about, they're both sort of revenge stories in a way.
Absolutely.
Is there something specific that kind of draws you to, I love revenge stories, so I'm all in, but was there something specific that was drawing you to that, or just
Well, the revenge story also happens to be a favorite of mine. We live in a very, very unjust world where if I just look at my Facebook feed, I see all this garbage going on and it's like, can't get it worse. Yes, it can get worse. Wait 3 seconds. And this is a catharsis for me.
Yeah.
A socially accepted form of media where you can have your scapegoats and you can see these, injustices get punished and, kind of makes you feel a little bit better. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's like a question I want to ask. Well, because there's a question I want to ask about For a Good Time Call, but I don't want to give anything away. I'm just wondering how you, there's a specific prosthetic that you kind of mentioned, and I'm just kind of curious how you arrived at that.
Yeah. Okay. So that was my idea because I'm, you know, out there in terms of my thought process. And so the story itself is about a douche bro who makes a secret sex tape and uploads it to the internet. And that's sort of mostly off screen, but we see a lot of the aftermath with the emotional fallout with his girlfriend, who is admittedly and justifiably very upset.
Right.
And she says, I hope something very bad happens to you. Lo and behold, her wish is granted in the form of Tristan Risk, who is so happy to play roles like these. She loves monster makeup. And for those of you who have seen American Mary, you will never recognize her under the crazy Betty Boop plastic surgery stuff, which is just unbelievable. So my friend Chris Halleck wrote the script, and actually it's funny, this was for another anthology that it probably won't ever happen. I actually pulled the film from it because I'm not sure if it's, it could be another couple of years before it ever comes out if it does. So I said, all right, look it. This is still topical. I want to put it out, and they let me. So, yeah. You know, nice guys at Severn Films allowed me to pull it. So, so Chris, my friend Chris Halleck wrote the script. And I said, I love it. What do you think if we go way bizarre off the fucking deep end with this idea that I have? And he's a weirdo like I am, so he liked it a lot. And I told Tristan, and she's like, oh my God, fuck yeah! And I'm like, let's party, I'll fly you out. So that was how that particular little tidbit of flesh was born. And I still have it, by the way.
Oh, really?
Maybe I'll trot it out.
Bring it to screenings and stuff. Yeah, let people take pictures with it.
Yeah, I actually made it. It was really, really easy to do. I made it out of latex and tissue paper, you know, sort of like the tracing paper, tissue paper, that special alcohol spray makeup palette that makeup artists use for special effects.
Well, and it's funny, too, because you mention A, the world being terrible, and B, this short still being relevant, because I think within a few hours...
Well, look at who our president is.
Right. And within a few hours of watching this, some story popped up, I think, in my Twitter feed or something about more celebrities whose, you know, pictures had been hacked and released online.
Sucks.
And it's exactly what's going on in the short. It's the worst.
I can't even imagine like how anyone thinks that's ever okay. That's private stuff, you know?
Right.
Oh, for fuck's sakes.
Right, because then immediately the comments are like, well, then they shouldn't take those pictures. Like, fuck
yeah, well, you know
you.
What? What you do in your own goddamn home is your own goddamn business. Exactly. And you wouldn't like it if you got hacked no matter what the photos were either.
Right. No, it's such sucks. Bullshit. But it was amazing how much your short was speaking to exactly that feeling of,
exactly,
God, I wish something bad would happen to these people.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So as a lifelong horror movie lover, what was kind of your entry into the genre? What was the thing that hooked you early on?
Well, it's hard to say, but there are a couple experiences in particular, because I can remember watching horror films since I was a toddler, honestly. I don't know why I was drawn to them. I just always was. I watched a lot of the old Roger Corman, Vincent Price, AIP, yeah, Poe pictures. I still to this day adore them. You know, the sense of theatricality and the color and the gothicness and just, oh my God, Vincent Price, his voice. You know, I was just so drawn to that. You know, I'd never seen anything like that in my tiny little life. And then there was An American Werewolf in London by John Landis, of course. My parents were watching that on HBO one night back in the early 80s, and I would hear this commotion and screaming and terrible sounds from down the hall. And so, you know, I would creep down the hall, and I would sort of hide behind the door frame and watch some stuff. I get scared, I'd run away, but I'd come back, and I would keep doing it. So I've always been really magnetically attracted to horror. So there you go.
I mean, I kind of feel the same way, and I've had this conversation with so many people where they ask, you know, why do you like this? And my response is always, you know, nobody ever asks you if you like comedy or drama. Nobody's ever like, well, why do you like
sure.
it? So somehow you have to defend why you like this thing.
Yeah, it's a black sheep thing. But, you know, I was saying this the other day. The horror people are the sweetest people on earth because we get out all our demons. We get everything out. I mean, the scariest people that you would think from a normal standpoint. I mean, people like Jack Ketchum, who I've met, it writes tremendously scarring things.
Yeah.
And he's just like super chill, super happy, you know, and that's because he gets all his craziness out on the paper.
Right.
And the same with horror filmmakers. I don't know if you know the filmmaker Douglas Buck. I was a programmer at Boston Underground not too long ago. And, you know, the first year I was programming, I brought him in and we showed family portraits. And if you've ever seen that, there's some really traumatizing shit going down in it. And he's just like this super chill hippie, you know, it's crazy, but it's just, and I saw this pattern repeat itself and I'm like, all right, this is how it is. And right. I understand it now because this is where I live as well.
And let me ask you this, because again, mm-hmm. this is another ongoing debate that I have. I don't need to be scared by horror movies to love mm-hmm. them. You know, I just love sure. existing in that world. How important is like, whether or not something is scary to you?
Well, I'm sort of addicted, I think, to finding the next scary thing. And I don't know why that is. And I suspect that a lot of other horror lovers have that sort of thing where they're searching for the next big gem in terms of scares. But I also really love sumptuous, beautiful works like Guillermo del Toro's, mm-hmm. Almost his entire canon, you know, starting from Kronos. Oh, my God. Such beautiful, mesmerizing work. So, and that stuff is not necessarily scary, but it is so, you know, it puts me in a rapture because it's so, so beautifully made with all the details. And another thing is atmosphere. If something can transport you out of the shitty life into a whole different world where you forget about your troubles and you forget about what's going on outside, that is just a gift.
Yeah, and maybe that's honestly so much of what it is that horror has the ability, right? It has the ability more than most genres, I think, to automatically say like, okay, this isn't exactly reality, and as long as you're okay with that, come along with me, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, did you ever feel better after watching a fucking rom-com? I hate them. They're terrible. They make me angry, actually. They're so full of shit. They stereotype both genders into horrible caricatures. Like, you know, you have the fucking the woman who is a harpy and always nagging or screaming,
right.
She's like the lovable dope and always tripping over herself and finally like gets a makeover, and then like the fucking male lead who's also a dumbass, in just a different sense, will see how beautiful she is and they fall in love, and then one of them screws something up and then it's a tragedy and they somehow get back together. It's a formula and it sucks.
Yeah. Wait, so now I may have misread. For a Good Time Call is not a romantic comedy?
Is not, my friends.
Oh, shit. Okay.
It is grim as fuck.
I need to rewatch that because I read that thing wrong.
Well, you know, some people, I suppose, would laugh at it, sure.
Those people are. Well, I mean, there is sense of joy in the justice that is served, but
yes,
it's not, certainly not funny at all. Although I did laugh. I don't want to give anything away. His reaction to, I don't know how that happened, I thought was funny, because that does feel completely rooted in, like, yeah, that's something an asshole would say.
Yeah, totally. And he, God bless Sean Carmichael, who let me cast him, is such an awful person. I am so grateful for what he did with the role. As the douchiest douche bro that ever douched.
Yeah, right? So mm-hmm. as someone who is, you know, on the festival circuit, who has programmed at festivals, who is very, very involved in the kind of current independent horror scene, what has you kind of the most excited right now?
In terms of, say, films or trends or just anything I'm seeing out in the world?
Sure. I mean, anything. Yeah. Are there films or filmmakers, or
Absolutely. The thing that I'm most excited about right now is the influx of female horror filmmakers like Julia Ducournau and, you know, Jennifer Kent, the resurgence of Karen Kusama mm-hmm. with The Invitation and her segment in XX. I find that incredibly invigorating because those points of view we haven't seen very much of at all, ever.
Right.
And it is just such a breath of fucking air to see something different. And in terms of, you know, sometimes there's such, how do I put it? There's such emotional shit kickers that you walk away and you just really think about what you just saw. And it's just, it sort of feeds my brain to see that sort of thing, you know? So I'm loving that right now. I can't wait to see more. And I hope, you know, more female filmmakers are allowed, and I hate to use the word allowed because we would, you know, balls to the wall do it if we had, you know, people that trusted us,
right,
that gave us some funds, that, you know, wanted to work with us,
right,
which is the main obstacle course, you know. It's the fucking, oh, you haven't done this before? Oh, well, we don't trust you to do it. But then they'll, you know, they'll turn around and they'll give, you know, a guy that's directed a indie rom-com,
right,
for like, you know, $200,000.
Right.
Oh,
here's Star Wars.
Here's Jurassic World.
Right.
Here's Star Wars. Here's
right.
fucking. Yeah, it's just, I can't tell you how infuriating it is. So I'm really hoping that, as my friend Jovanka Vukovic put it last week to me, it's not a hill to die on. I'm really hoping she's right. And she's got nerves of steel, and, yeah, so
she's
onward.
Awesome. Her yeah. segment in XX I thought was so great too.
Oh yeah, it's one of my favorites out there, and that's actually a Jack Ketchum adaptation.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, she. I was listening to the McGarris podcast this week, and she was on there with Karen, and she talks about literally being told, you know, oh, we hired a woman once and it didn't go well, so
yeah, that's not okay for fucking anybody to say that shit out loud.
That is,
you know, it's
right.
just so against the law.
Right.
For one, it's discriminatory, everything, like, but that's the fucking problem. That's the world that we live in, where if we don't if we don't do good, we go to director jail for a much longer time
right.
than the guys ever could.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know. Did you ever see The Roost by Ty West?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So now Ty West,
right,
from that film,
right,
got to leap and bound forward to working with John Travolta,
right,
in a horror Western, you know? So it's like, if a woman had ever made The Roost, and sorry, Ty, for saying this out loud to listeners, but it's true. If a woman had ever made that film, nobody would ever want to work with her.
Yeah.
He was allowed to fail. he was allowed to grow and learn and grow and learn, and he got better and he was able to develop his skills. See, the problem is people inherently don't trust women, and it's fucking awful, and I hate it, and they're judged on what they've done before, while men are judged on their potential.
Right. Yeah. Is it because there isn't a proven track record in terms of, because sexism has been prevalent for so long, is it like, well, we're used to men, that's what we know, so that's what we want to go with?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, okay. That's an inherent bias. It's a systematic bias. Right. Yeah.
God, I hope.
I mean, the people that are in power to make decisions, a lot of them will come out and say, yes, it's a problem, but then they won't back up that statement.
Right.
They will go ahead and they'll say, yes, it's a problem, but we can't take a risk.
Right.
Oh, really? You're going to take a risk on like Colin Trevorrow and give him Jurassic World?
Right.
You're going to take a risk on like this actor who's never directed a goddamn thing and give him $2 million. I mean, it's staggering the leap of faith that, you know, they'll give to a man just because he fits the, you know, image of a director and somehow has perceived leadership skills and somehow A, B, C, and D, you know, I could go on all day.
And I have friends.
And it's like, go ahead.
I have friends who swear that this is the last gasp of this, that Trump and all of it, that it's all like one last desperate attempt to cling on to, you know, something that they see slipping away.
Well, it's certainly a screaming, dying gasp.
Yes, it is.
Because the hatred that's come out
in
terms of misogyny, in terms of racism, in terms of classism is just, it's atrocious. I can't believe how backwards we've slipped to just regressing to, I don't know, what I want to say, like 1940s, 1950s levels, maybe even more. I'm not sure.
Well, and every time I allow myself to believe, okay, maybe this is the last gasp, and maybe, you know, the people at the top feel this way, but those of us down here who are consuming the art or, you know, patronizing the art, like, we're all fine with it, right? And then, you know, Get Out will come out, and there's this huge pushback against, hey, it's racist against white people. Like, you have got to be fucking kidding me.
Or yeah,
XX,
I mean,
like, how come no men? Like, please go fuck yourself.
There's only been all the men 100% for, like, you know, 95% of civilization. Fuck you.
Exactly.
You know, more rights for another group of people doesn't mean less rights for you. It's not pie.
Right, right.
Fuck's sakes.
Well, again,
so,
that was...
and I mean, and you know, to be fair, I don't want to say like, oh, these male filmmakers, they don't deserve, you know, their breaks. They're not talented, because they are. But it's just when you see this happening again and again and again and again, you know, what did Yovaka say? Like 52% of film school graduates are women, and yet less than 7% are directors working.
Right.
Why do you think that is?
Right. And that it even...
We all know.
That there was even a backslide over the last year, right?
Oh, it's fucking pathetic. Yeah, the last couple of years. It's so pathetic. So the solution is, if you want to see more crazier, different types of horror films, go and find your women. Go and find us at festivals. Support them with your money. Support them on social media. Tweet at the fucking movie studios. Say... You know what? You should hire Jennifer Kent. You know what? You should hire Yovanka and Karen and Roxanne and fuck it, me. Why not? And, you know,
fuck yeah.
You know, Gigi and Jill, and there's so many women that, you know, since we're apparently few and far in between, so hard to find, we keep in touch with each other. So, yeah, we trade notes and we trade stories, and some shit is just horrifying.
Oh, I can't even imagine. But again, that's one of the reasons why sitting through that block of shorts, like Innsmouth jumped out at me more than any of, and some of them were entertaining and cool. I'm not, again, shit talking any of the other shorts, but that one jumped out because it was like, oh, this feels new and different and interesting in a way that the others didn't, you know?
Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, it was,
you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you're part of any marginalized section of society, to try and, you know, achieve anything, you have to achieve doubly than that of the, you know, the straight white guy.
Right.
You have to. you have to. And it's just like the harder you work, it's going to be, you know, seen as equal to mediocreness. So it's just, it is what it is. But yes, I mean, make noise and talk to people and tell other people and tell your friends, like, holy fuck, I just saw this fucking crazy thing. Tweet about it, tell to people about it on Facebook. You know, go to film festivals, especially because that's the breeding ground for us right now.
Yeah.
I think in particular.
I was on a podcast recently where, and this was before they announced David Gordon Green for directing Halloween. And so it was this roundtable discussion. They're like, who should direct the next Halloween? And again, it's the same kind of four names being kicked around.
Right.
So I was like, I named Jill. I was like, fucking Jill should do it. I think that would be awesome.
It would
and
be awesome.
I wish something like that would be considered. You know?
So do we.
I know. I know. I'm sorry.
And, you know, we're more than capable of doing it. But the problem is, do people believe us or trust us?
Right.
And the problem is that they don't.
Right.
So we're working very hard to make that happen.
One of the other things that I wanted to talk about, in addition to your own very cool shorts, which everyone should go see at the Boston Underground Film Festival if you live in Boston, and tweet about them. And
I'll be in Chattanooga very soon too.
Oh, okay. I saw that lineup was just posted as well.
Yeah. For a good time call, we'll also be playing the Chattanooga Film Festival in Tennessee, in early April. The weekend, or I don't know, I think it's like the 6th or the 9th is the festival date. I don't have the time and date of my film yet, but I will be there. It's also playing, no wait, yes, no, sorry, I'm sorry, I get so confused with two shorts on the festival circuit that they cross over in my head. Rites of Vengeance will play Seattle at the Bone Bat Comedy of Horrors Festival on April 8th. I don't know what time yet, so...
That's awesome. Everybody. So you're all over the country. Everybody should be supporting these shorts. Did you, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like I remember seeing something on Facebook at the Bruce Campbell Fest that I was at. Mm-hmm. Did you like break your leg or something?
I fell in the theater and I sprained my ankle very badly.
Okay.
I took a nosedive in front of Barbara Crampton. It was super fun and really painful.
Yeah. Well, I just remember there being a horror story about people not helping.
Yeah, well, what happened was my messenger bag caught on the railing, and I was stepping down to say hello. I had just got to the festival. It was after the first film that I had seen, you know, and I was going to say hello because we knew each other. And guess what? The bag wraps around the railing, and I spin like off my axis, and I lose my balance, and I hit my ankle really fucking hard. So it just swelled up. And I went to, you know, an urgent care clinic and they wrapped me up, which is why when I came to the Q&A, you saw me limping up there with the help of Zach Hagen. He was kind enough to act as my human crush.
So one of the other things that I wanted to talk about was when I had messaged you about possibly coming on the show, I said, hey, is there a movie that you might like to talk about as well? Because that's usually the format of the show, is we kind of do a long form conversation about a specific movie. And you threw out a couple of titles and we landed on David Cronenberg's The Brood.
Yes.
So what was it about The Brood that was the one that made you say, like, yeah, fuck, that's the one I want to do?
Well, it was one of those films that I had seen early on in my, I don't know, mental development, I suppose. I saw it, I think, originally on Joe Bob Briggs' Monster Vision, and that was a hell of a show. Like, he introduced me to so much stuff, like The Brood and Phantasm and Motel Hell, you know, like all this great bizarro shit. But the film holds up incredibly well. I think it's, you know, understated. I think it doesn't get enough love. I don't think it's as revered as it should be. It's an incredibly potent story that, of course, Cronenberg being who he is, body horror is front and center.
Right.
It's about the, you know, disintegration of a family unit. And of course, there are pretty whacked and horrible things that happen, but it's lost none of its power. I rewatched it again, two nights ago with the Criterion disc, which I'm so happy Criterion put that out. And it's still so fucking good, you know. You've got Art Hindle and Alla Reid and Samantha Eggar and, you know, little Chrissy Hynde, and it's just like, wow, they're all just so fucking good. And they treat the material with respect, which is another reason why it's so well done. You know, they take the role seriously. They react, you know, in a non-hammy manner. And right. As a result, the film has a lot of weight. And, you know, at the heart of it, it's about this family just totally destructing. You know, the grandparents die. The mom eventually dies. For anyone who hasn't seen The Brood.
Right,
you know,
yeah, we're spoiling
like,
The Brood.
It's spoiling like an almost 40-year-old movie. So sorry. Like, get on that shit because it's amazing.
It had been a long time since a couple years since I had seen it. I was at a screening of it a couple years ago that Art Hindle was actually at, and so it was cool to hear him.
Were you in Toronto?
No, this was in Chicago.
Oh, wow, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was cool, and he was obviously just super nice and cool. But it was a Cronenberg movie that I think I came to a little bit later. I think most of Cronenberg's movies, mm-hmm. I think I came to later just because any that I saw as a kid, I think I even knew at the time, except for maybe The Fly. I was like, I'm too young for this. This is going over my head, you know?
It's super adult material, all of it, which is why it stuck in my head when I saw, like, what the fuck is this? This is something else, you know?
It's so watching it, I rewatched it today, and it played better than it ever had.
Right?
Because I was like, this is the saddest fucking horror movie ever made. This is...
I love it so much.
It's such a tragedy. And it's like you said, it's a domestic drama, basically, for almost its entire running time. And then, you know, Samantha Eggar lifts her shirt up and has a sack with a mutant baby on it. And I was like, I cannot believe he pulls off this visual, given what's come before.
Right, and it's totally insane. Like, she's got the craze in her eyes, you know, and she licks this fucking sack. Like, actually, she tears it open with her teeth, and she licks this bloody mutant baby fetus, and it's so awesome. And she's caring for it like an animal, like a cat. But it has all that gravitas to it. It's not cheesy in the slightest, which is what makes it even scarier.
And I think watching it today, I think the scene that hit me harder than it ever had was the scene where Henry Beckman, I think is his name, he plays the grandpa.
Yeah.
Where he just has a breakdown on his bed and it's right before he's killed. But I was like, oh my God.
It is
horrible.
So sad. Yes. And he calls up, you know, a Frank Carveth, and he's crying because he's drank too much. He went out to the old house. His ex-wife is dead because he's fucking little asshole mutant children. And yeah, it is a tragedy, man.
And so Cronenberg, who just celebrated a birthday this week, I believe.
Yeah, 74, I think, yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Where not to get off topic, but where are you at on Cronenberg's more recent output?
So I haven't seen Cosmopolis. I've seen Maps of the Stars. I saw the one with Jung and Freud. I don't remember. Was it A Dangerous Method?
A Dangerous Method, I think that was called. Yeah, yeah.
Eastern Promises and A History of Violence I liked very much.
Yeah.
The other ones I've seen don't really connect with me. Or I don't connect with them. You know, I appreciate the themes and the explorations, but it's just I think it's a little too academic, I think. It doesn't resonate with me emotionally like his body horror stuff does, or even his stuff with Vigo. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's the actors or if it's the story or the type of stories, but I don't connect with them as emotionally as I do his earlier stuff.
Yeah. Well, and again, like, you know, something like Maps to the Stars, which is everybody's so disconnected, but everybody's like in a little bit of a different movie also. Like,
it's a fucking weird film.
Yeah, I mean, I love Julianne Moore in that movie. She goes for it in a great way.
It's true.
It's funny because my memory of like Dead Ringers was that that was where the coldness of Cronenberg really started. And then I went back and rewatched it, but I was like, oh no, this movie's super sad and emotional also. There's a clinicism to it because of the whole like gynecology angle, but
yeah, which is nasty.
Oh my God. It's
all those instruments. Oh my God.
Yeah. No.
Have you read his book Consumed?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
Yes, it is.
Well, of course it is, but it reminded me a lot of Dead Ringers in that very cold clinical medical, you know, same sort of theme.
Being fascinated by weird body shit. And, and for me, you know, like I think my favorite Cronenberg period is probably the 80s, even though that's like his most commercial period. But that's where a lot of my favorites of his were kind of being made. You know, I'd love Videodrome probably more than any of them. But his 70s period is so interesting because the movies have so many, like especially the early stuff. They have so many rough edges still, but these ideas just break through, and the rough edges actually make the whole thing feel a little bit more dangerous.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly what I think of when I think of Shivers or They Came From Within.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's this, and I laugh every time I see this scene or talk about it. That slug, when it falls on the old lady's like umbrella that's see-through and it goes plop. And she looks up. She has no idea what just happened. And it's amazing. I love it so much.
So The Brood, it kind of exists. It kind of bridges those two periods because I think it's, in terms of technique and stuff, I think it's put together really well. It has a little bit of that weird, like, unhinged feeling that some of his 70s stuff does. But it's put together in a way more like his 80s stuff. And
exactly.
It's I love it just as an expression of, and I can't relate to it necessarily in terms of my parents got divorced, but their divorce didn't feel anything like this, you know? So it's not like I can relate to it, but the emotions come through in such a way. And I love it as an expression as such a balls out horror film as an expression of something so profoundly personal.
Right. And, you know, I'm going to come out and I'll say this, and it's the first time I've ever said this in public. The Brood is very personal to me for that reason. My parents got divorced. It was finalized on my 8th birthday.
Ooh.
And that was 88 maybe. I think. And so the thing was, I came from a very unstable environment where there was a lot of screaming. There was a lot of fighting. There was a lot of even throwing things around. I mean, my dad is, I don't talk to him anymore, but it's kind of like, he was like Nola to me in a lot of ways because I never knew what the fuck was going to happen with him. And he would make these threats and stuff. And things were very, very violent and felt emotionally and verbally violent. And that raw edge of The Brood brings me back to that time. And it's the same fucking time period for me as it is in that film. And it's something I really, really fucking relate to.
Yeah.
You know, I know that Cronenberg famously, that film is kind of about his divorce that he was going through. And he flew back to Toronto from California because his wife had taken their daughter somewhere and living in a commune. And that was fucking madness. So yeah, there's that.
Let me ask you this, because we just had this whole kind of conversation about, you know, women and horror and kind of the misogyny of Hollywood. Do you feel like any of the movie is misogynistic?
The Brood?
Yeah.
You know, I don't. And that's probably a surprising thing to say because, you know, the mom is the bad guy. But the thing is, she didn't get there by herself.
Right.
Dr. Raglan, played immensely well by Oliver Reed, brought out these horrible things from within her, whether he meant to or not, who the fuck knows. There's that whole backstory where we don't know a whole lot about it, but his therapies bring out the rage from within, and they become physical manifestations. Usually, like, it'll be like that one guy has the lymphoma, the Carson,
right,
like the cancer of the lymph nodes. The little girl ends up, having some growths on her arm at the end that look like, hives, and there's other stuff. But, the feral children are just, that's a whole other level. Yeah.
Are these
I was going with that.
We were talking about, like, is it misogyny or
misogynist.
Not? Because I grapple with that. I remember one of my first introductions to the film was reading Cronenberg on Cronenberg, and he's talking about that scene where Samantha Eggar, the scene that is kind of famously cut, where she's licking the sack and ripping it open, and he describes it as a bitch licking her pups. And that always struck me because I know that the technical term for a female dog is a bitch, but like I've never used that word to describe a female dog.
Same.
And so it always struck me as like, that seems harsh.
Yeah, it is. It's an antiquated word, for sure. And it's been sort of bastardized and thrown onto women as, right, an insult. And I think, and he was very, 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 very fucking bitter towards his wife at that time. So I can't say I'm very surprised to hear him say that, even though it sucks to hear out loud.
Right.
But to me, I never really saw it that way. I think the exploration of women in, as the villain is a very exciting one, because you don't often see it. You don't often see a woman's terrible side come out in such magnitude on film. Another amazing example is Lena Headey in Dread. Holy shit. Of course, same actress, Game of Thrones. It's amazing,
right, right,
multifaceted, and so very smart and capable. I love that. First of all, I love villains, in any film. I probably should say that I relate to them more than the hero, but I do. And they're just more interesting to watch.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah. They're smarter. They have more motivations, and they're just so interesting. And to see to have a woman in one of those roles, I think is a fantastic way to explore the other. It's very dangerous, and it's quite interesting to me. But, I think from Cronenberg's point of view, and he was, terrifically scarred and hated his wife at that point, and I'm sure he had his reasons. But I never personally saw it as, misogynistic in any way. And I was actually, coming from my personal background, happy to see the man, the father, as a loving, caring,
right, right,
rescuer, because I didn't have that. I never had that.
Sure.
So it was nice to see that reversal,
yeah,
for me,
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with it because I don't necessarily watch the film and say, okay, this is misogynistic, because I don't think it's a story. If we're going to say it's this personal, I don't think it's a story about all women. If it's,
no,
it's a story about one woman, And so,
sure. I think the more, no, I mean, what I think of terms of misogyny is more casual fucking misogyny.
Right.
Where the only women are there to be, trophies, or charnel for the slasher, where they run around and their jiggly parts fall out, and they're there to be oogled and then murdered or raped, and that's just, it's so fucking hideously common. I'm just so sick of it. That,
right,
to me is misogyny. Okay, if you're gonna have a really intricate story and it's done artfully in a giallo, then that I can kind of forgive.
Okay.
Because at least there's some art house elements there, and it's just not like, slapped on film, whatever. I mean, if you want to look at misogyny in Hollywood or women in media, go read some casting calls. Okay. It'll be like, I'll just make something up the top of my fucking head because they're very similar, a lot of them. Okay. All right. Hank, 25, rapidly on the rise in his partner's firm, works really hard, really driven, really smart, and he has this whole like backstory and all these attributes. Hank's girlfriend, 20, really insecure, looks hot in a bikini, and that's it.
Doesn't even have a name, right?
Like, doesn't even have a name.
I remember
she
when
she might have a name if she's lucky.
Right.
She might have an interest in her, you know, on-screen role if she's lucky. But there, she's. I'll tell you a story about this film that I fucking saw and this filmmaker, and he was just so fucking oblivious that the audience was stunned by his bullshit. Okay, so it was a sci-fi film, and it was not really well written at all. The woman in the story was the girlfriend, but she was sort of smart and had her own, you know, agenda and had agency. But suddenly that changed, and it was just a really abrupt break in the story. And all of a sudden she was kidnapped and she didn't do anything for the whole fucking rest of the film. So he set her up as like almost a fully formed character, but then just another fucking story mechanism.
Right.
And people asked him about that on stage when he was there for the Q&A, and he was like, oh, well, she was only there for the guy to save. That came out of his mouth on stage. And he had a PR person there, and I looked over at her like, how are you not pulling this guy off stage with a cane? Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? And like somebody else called him out, like, why do you think that's okay? And he's like, well, Chinatown did it. And we're like, what? What is even happening? What? No.
Oh, that's literally my new favorite excuse for anything, though. Well, Chinatown did it. Did you eat the last cookie? Chinatown did it. What?
I wanted to stand up and scream. But I was so shocked and stupefied. I couldn't even say anything, just like the rest of the audience.
Right.
It's unbelievable, literally unbelievable.
There's some hope in the fact that the audience was at least horrified by it.
I think that they were.
Yeah,
yes.
I remember. I think last year, maybe Rose McGowan leaked some casting notes for like the new Adam Sandler movie, and
I remember that.
It's like you want to believe that that shit's not real because again, I'm so removed from all of it. But then, here it is in print in front of you.
That was a very tame casting notice, by the way.
Right.
Very fucking tame.
And it's so depressing. Again, and I'm not a woman who's trying to work in the industry, you know, and I'm just outside of it getting depressed. So I can't imagine how unbelievably depressing it is.
Well, this is what, you know, Ghostbusters, the remake with the all lady cast, lampooned with the casting of Chris Hemsworth as the ditzy male receptionist.
Right.
That was a direct, like, in your face, how do you like it type of reaction. Thank you, Paul Feig.
Right.
That was amazing and so funny because, and then did you see these guys' reactions tweeting like, oh my God, the one guy that's like, in the movie as like a good guy and he's so stupid and dumb and he has to get saved. Da, da, da. And it's like, well, how do you think that we felt for the last 80,000 years?
Right.
How's it feel? Not so good, huh?
As you were describing that sci-fi movie in my head, I'm like, oh, I've seen 20 of these, you know, in the last 5 years where it's, oh, here's a female character who's interesting. What? Oh, she's going to be knocked out in the last act just so
that.
And
this is why we need women filmmakers. This is why we need people of color filmmakers. We need other points of view.
Right.
Because we are starving intellectually for awesome stories.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, anyway, so back to The Brood. No, don't get me wrong. I love all this. It would seem as though Cronenberg is a big influence on your own work. There are even shots in Innsmouth that feel right out of a Cronenberg film. Would you say that that's accurate?
Oh, that's so flattering. Oh, my God. Thank you. I mean, Cronenberg, Lynch, Carpenter, all those guys.
Yeah.
Are just amazing, and I don't even try to emulate them, but I think if you're steeped in something so deeply with your favorite films that you love to watch, it's just going to come out somewhere somehow.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. Well, right. If body horror in some way speaks to you and has kind of seeped into your brain over the years, like it's going to kind of come sure. back out in the stories that you tell. You
and
know?
Well, here's the thing. Being a woman is like, that's body horror in itself. No, for real. You have a parasite that comes out of you
right.
screaming.
Right.
And it grows inside of you for fucking 9 months. That's
right.
horrifying to me.
Right.
That's horrifying.
You're,
like,
can
you imagine if you felt something moving around inside of you? How creepy is that?
I got creeped out just feeling something move around inside of my wife. She would be like, oh, put your hand on this. And it's like,
dude,
oh,
really?
Shit.
I know.
Something
I
is
know,
alive
it's fucking weird.
In you. Yeah. I just earlier today read your story, Tilbarian Holiday.
Oh, wow. You did. Thank you.
Listen, I do my shit. I bought
awesome.
The book as soon as I saw that you had a story in there, because like I said, I'm a fan, but I haven't had
Aww.
A chance to read it, but I immediately went and read the story. And again, it speaks to exactly what you are talking about, which is sometimes the nightmare of female biology, for lack of a better, you know.
Absolutely, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It is a fucking nightmare.
We can be. I don't want to just, I don't feel comfortable making that blanket statement, but
I do.
Well, you can.
I let's put it this way. I don't take any offense with you saying that
okay, good.
At all because
good.
I agree with it 1,000%.
Okay.
It fucking sucks, dude.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'm flattered. Not many people have read the book or my story, and that's my first ever published story. So yeah, Wicked Witches. I'm super psyched to be a published writer now.
It's very cool. And it's available on Amazon for everybody who's listening. It's a whole anthology of stories of horror writers, you know, out of the New England area. But okay, so get away from the brood for 1 second. How do you kind of, because you have your hands in all of these different pies? What's the I don't know what the fucking expression is. So like
something like that.
You're writing short stories, you're writing, you know, more like news pieces or essays on birth, movies, death, you're making short films, you're programming, like,
yeah,
how do you, like, a story comes to you, how do you decide, okay, this I'm going to write as a short story, or this I'm going to turn into a film? Like, how does that process work?
Well, I don't know. It's an organic thing, and I'll try to like talk through this. So basically I'll get a weird idea and it'll just be a seed, you know, and then I say, okay, well, this sticks in my head. And why? What about it disturbs me? If it disturbs other people, is this something we need to talk about in society? Because you've probably noticed I do a lot of social political stuff in my horror films,
yeah.
Because I'm passionate about the bullshit that goes on in the world and people need to be called out on it. So I write short scripts. I write, I've co-written a feature with, my postpartum co-writer, Chris Halleck, you know, who he also written A Favor and For a Good Time Call.
Right.
I am working on a couple other short stories right now. One I'm co-writing with Casey Lansdale, which is really exciting. She, if you don't know, she starred in my short film Postpartum. And she is Joe R. Lansdale's daughter. And she's super talented and smart and funny and amazing on her own rights. And so I'll come up with an idea. And I will figure out, all right, what is it about this thing that speaks to me? In what format do I want to see it in? In some cases, I will say, for instance, I have another short story that I have submitted to an anthology called Heavy Metal. And that is also a revenge tale because why not? Thanks. It's about a woman pushed to the brink by a very abusive man, and very disturbing things happen. So I wrote that in script form and short story form. I wrote it originally as prose, and then I had an opportunity to pass off a couple of scripts for possible inclusion in some super secretive Netflix thing, and the scope of the series has changed completely, and now I don't think they're going to be doing horror at all, so boo-hoo.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that's the business, you know, that opportunities come and go,
right.
Things materialize and vanish. So it's a miracle that any fucking thing ever gets made. So I'm doing a little bit more short story work because I have all these ideas and I'm passionate about them. And I want to get them out. I started a new story last night, which I stopped immediately because I was just like, holy shit, what the fuck? I did not expect this to take an immediate dark turn in the first paragraph. Like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Is this how Jack Ketchum feels? I don't know. Maybe I'll ask him next time I see him. It's like, fuck it. What the fuck? All right. I don't know. So, yeah. And if I'm disturbed that much, I think like, all right, well, what is wrong with me? Is there something really wrong with me or am I okay? I don't know. But, you know, maybe I'll continue to explore that idea and or just tone it down a bit. I'm not sure yet. So the thing is just – if you have an idea, write it down because you're going to forget it.
Right.
And then go back to, like I say, I have, you know, a notebook full of, you know, hastily scribbled treatments for stories. And I'll say, all right, well, there's an anthology with a call for submissions that is similar to this thing. I'm like, all right, well, how can I develop it for this anthology, which is much more specific? And so it starts off very abstract, but then that's where, you know, I don't want to say I have a logical mind because that's the farthest thing ever from the truth, but I have to involve a little bit of logic to sort of shape it into an actual story.
Sure.
So there you go. It's the best answer I can give right now.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you. Last topic about the brood that I want to just bring it back to quickly. Is this the best killer kid movie ever made?
Yes.
Is there anything else in contention?
Well, The Bad Seed is sure. Patty McCormick.
Yeah.
Is amazing. Yeah. You give me those shoes. So fucking brilliantly done. And it's terrifying too. What else? What would you say that's in the running for the best?
I feel like this is kind of a blind spot for me. Like I've never seen. Is it
Beware
Children at Play? Is that the one, the Spanish one?
Yeah, that's not so good, though.
I've never seen it.
There's Who Can Kill a Child. That's awesome.
Okay, and that's another. That's the Spanish one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that one's awesome, but The Brood is better.
Okay. I mean, I've seen, like, Bloody Birthday, but I don't really think that counts.
I don't know that I've seen that one.
You're probably okay. Like, it's fine. It's three kids who are, like, born on an eclipse. It's an 80s slasher.
Yeah,
but The Brood is no doubt better. I'm not even going to mention those two in the same sentence. Really, I don't feel like I've seen a ton of killer kid movies. Village of the Damned?
They're not. Yeah, Village of the Damned for sure. There's Orphan, which didn't look that great, but I haven't seen it.
The one from a few years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, you should see it.
Oh, is it good?
It hasn't been spoiled for you?
I don't think so.
Oh shit. Yeah, then you need to see it. I don't want to say anything, but it's not
cool.
It's not the movie you think it is.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's
awesome.
It's crazy in a good way.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah. I'll have to see that then.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't want
to of course there's, you know, The Omen.
Oh, right. Yeah. Although I mean
can't overlook that, but of course it's like that's like it's not like such a killer kid thing. It's like more like a devil thing, but
right.
With kid.
And I respect The Omen, but I will admit it doesn't do a ton for me.
did you grow up?
I did not grow up with it. No, I did
not.
And I did not grow up religious either.
Yeah, if you grew up Catholic, those films will do stuff to you.
Okay, so I don't want to pry.
I grew up Catholic.
Okay, that was a question that I wanted to ask after watching your short because I was wondering. Exactly where this came from, you know.
Oh, it comes from a lot of anger at the church.
Sure.
But
it's possible to feel that anger from the outside. So I was kind of wondering, do you know what I mean? Like, is this something that you've observed and feel angry about? But this is coming, I think, from a deeper place of having existed in that world.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing. I wasn't really like a whole lot of other kids, which I'm sure you have no trouble believing, having seen my work and read my stuff. I really am an observer of human nature, and even at a really young age, I saw that religion was just a way to control people. And particularly the Catholic Church was just, you know, my eyes were open so young. And I'm like, this is full of shit. And why are you subjugating the woman? What the hell is that about? Fuck that.
Yeah.
And so my mom gave me the choice when I was 7. Do you want to continue on with parochial school or do you want a public school? I'm like, public. And I don't want to go to CCD either. And I don't want to be confirmed. And fuck all that. And so, yeah, so there's that. But then there's the flip side where I know several people who have been physically molested and abused by priests. That's a thing here in Boston,
right,
where
right.
If you've seen Spotlight,
right.
It is absolutely fucking heartbreaking to me because it is so on point. There's a very, very rich Catholic tradition here with the Italians and the Irish. And they are taught to see the clergy as infallible,
mm-hmm.
and pillars of the society and absolutely, you know, the most trustworthy people ever. And then they go ahead and they do things like this. And it's not every single person in the church, obviously. The problem is that they cover that shit up and they move the priests around.
Right.
And that is, I don't know if it's worse or just as bad.
It's just as bad. I mean, it truly is just as bad.
It's throwing gasoline on the fire for me to see this happening.
To be so complicit in it is
disgusting. And like I said, some of these survivors are very dear and very close friends of mine. And it makes me even more infuriated because a lot of these people didn't survive this. They committed suicide via, you know, guns or razor blades or drugs or alcohol slowly, all of the above. And they were completely destroyed in mind and body and soul until they couldn't live anymore. And you know what? Fuck that. So that's why I made Rites of Vengeance.
You can feel kind of that, not just the anger, but a kind of catharsis in it as well.
Yeah, it's something that I needed
to
make happen.
It's really beautifully shot, too.
Thank you. Jarrett Blinkhorn is my new cinematographer, and he's fucking amazing. He's from Rhode Island, and he was, I believe, a producer on The Mind's Eye and a production. What was Joe's first film? Almost Human.
Almost Human, yeah.
I think he was like a unit production, something rather on that. I'm not sure exactly what the title was. But I met him, strangely enough, at Logan Airport for the first time. We were both on the same flight to Fantastic Fest in 2015. But we had met online virtually. We were the two New England filmmakers playing together in a block over at Fright Fest in London.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, it was super cool. Neither of us had been able to go, but he was like, hey, you're from New England too. And I'm like, hey, what's up? You know? And so we ended up meeting a couple of times in person and, you know, just clicked. And I'm like, dude, we got to work together. It's going to be amazing. And so we finally were able to make it happen in January. This was shot and he edited it and scored it. And it, Jesus Christ, I think he had a cut within a week of shooting. And when you find someone that has as much passion as energy as you do, you know, you stick with that person.
Right.
So I'm super, super excited to be working with Jarrett.
That is super cool. I feel bad. I don't want to take any more of your time. I know it's late by you, but I don't even know how to start thanking you for this conversation. It has been one of the best conversations I've had in a while. So.
Oh, well, I'm so happy. You know, it's been fun for me too. I love being asked intelligent questions because I love using my brain, you know, as scary as the corners of the brain is to me.
Right.
You know, it's super fun. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And where can everyone find you online?
Okay. If you go to my website, nihilnoctem.com, that's NihilNoctem.com. You'll also see links to my Facebook film page and Twitter account. And at the website, you'll also be able to see teasers and read you know, snippets of reviews and see stills and be able to see where the films are playing, hopefully in your area. And yeah.
That's awesome. I wish you the best of luck at the Boston Underground Film Festival and at Chattanooga coming up. If anyone lives anywhere within driving distance or has the money for airfare, go out to these festivals and support Izzy and independent horror. And I will obviously keep turning as many people on to your work as I can.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, it deserves as wide an audience as possible. And hopefully you'll get to come back to Bruce Campbell again this summer.
I hope so. And this time I'm going to stay away from that fucking railing. God.
Just bring crutches just in case.
No.
Just travel with crutches and then you won't need them. That's how that works. Oh, when you have them, sakes. You don't need them.
Do you know, on my way out, they minged me at the airport. I had a nice fancy new air splint that you pumped up like fucking like Air Jordan. I had to take it off. And what? Go through the metal detector and all that, get out of the wheelchair and all that shit. I mean, for fuck's sakes. Yeah. Our country's hideous. So.
And on that note. Anyway, yeah. Thank you again so much. And I hopefully will talk to you in the very near future.
Anytime, man.
You Thanks. Are awesome. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Patrick.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.